Hello and welcome to the James Bond Complex, the show where we discuss and enjoy everything James Bond from Fleming to film and everything in between. I'm all alone, so there's no ooh today, but I'm...
Oh, wait.
I've got a guest, a special guest, David Zaritsky, here to review Quantum of Solace, because we've never done a Quantum of Solace review here on the show. So thanks, David, for being with us.
You're welcome. Wait, you've never done it? This is the first Quantum of Solace review after all these years?
This is the first time as the James Bond Complex we've done an official Quantum of Solace first-time review. I've done it as a That's What She Said review. I've never done it as an official review. So that's a different animal as a review. It's not the same. It's not the same structure, and it's not the same. I don't want to say the same arguments, but they're different arguments.
Yeah, because it's an argument you can't win if you're doing it against your wife. Like you, I won't back down as easy. But thank you for choosing me as the, I guess, the quasi poster child for this film.
Well, I mean, I've always enjoyed Quantum. I understand why it gets so much slack, and I know why it gets so much negativity around it. I can understand it. I don't like that it does, but I can understand it. And I rewatched it last week, and it kind of hit me that the flaws hit me a little bit harder. But there's a lot of good things about this movie, and I want to start with the pre-title sequence. I think that's one of the better pre-title sequences that we've had in a while with the car chase. I think that it was simple, no frills, just pure Bond. What do you think about it, David?
Yeah, for me, it's probably not in the top five pre-title sequence, but I understand what you're talking about because it's so visceral and hard-hitting. It's so bombastic that it throws you into... behind the eyes of James Bond. And that's what I think the theme of this movie is that if you're not expecting to go on this, you know, 4D ride of being James Bond, this is not the film for you. But if you want to be like Bond, this is the right film. So you're right. The pre-title sequence puts you firmly in a seat of an Aston Martin. I mean, you're feeling all the craziness. Is that why you like it as well?
Oh, that's why I like it, because I'd like to be in the front seat of an Aston Martin.
Not in a car crash.
Less about the car crash. That interests me a little bit less. And, you know, the paintwork gets kind of a little bit scuffed, and I'd rather keep it pristine like yours. I think it starts right away, like heart racing action. I think this movie kind of quantifies the action aspect of it, of Bond. I think it's really hard on the action. I mean, we know why. There was issues with the writing and things like that, so they kind of pushed it a little bit harder on the action scenes. But this kind of like that high tempo, they don't ease you into it. It's bang. You get that little bit of the great David Arnold soundtrack with the kind of that fade into the song. One of my favorite tracks on the soundtrack is that track. I put it on every time I'm going on a little road trip in my little Chevy Sonic
Right. I defy, I don't care what you drive. You could drive a Honda Odyssey. I defy anybody to listen to that and not push the pedal down harder and harder and harder because you just want to speed. It's like,
you get to that crescendo
shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, absolutely. 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 The one thing that kind of starts to get to me in Quantum is the song itself, the theme song. I'm a big rock guy. Like I'm a heavy metal guy. I don't like the song. I really like Chris Cornell, what he did with it.
But yeah, tell me why. Like, break it down for me, because I want to hear from a hard rock guy why you don't like it, because I have my own reasons, but I want to hear yours.
I'm not a fan of Jack White to begin with. I think he's an entirely overrated guitarist. I don't know why he's been on the cover of magazines with Jimmy Page, and they kind of like. I understand that he's a different artist, but he kind of came up at a time where we had this alt rock. I don't want to say revolution, but rebirth of like the garage rock. So I can kind of understand how he got popular, but I still don't like him. I don't like him as a guitarist. I think there's probably 40 guitarists ahead of him that are more talented in his genre than him. And I think it was just kind of a mismatch with Alicia Keys, because she's got a great voice. And if it had just been her, doing, you know, a piano orchestrated song. That's the other thing that kind of left me hanging, is there's not enough orchestration. The Chris Cornell song from Casino Royale is rock, but there's that orchestration behind it. When you see it live with the orchestra, as I did a couple of years ago, it really has a punch, the rock and the symphony and all that. It really goes well together. And this kind of leaves you lacking that it's not, it doesn't feel like a Bond song. It doesn't have that zing to it, you know?
I agree. I mean, it feels like, to me, like a dog's breakfast. Like it's just not one thing. It's trying. Yeah. It almost sounds like a jam session. Like they went into a room and they're like, "Look, we got nothing, guys. So why don't we just start?" And then suddenly it changes, but not. The film is a little bit like this in the sense that it kind of throws you into a lot of. Multiple things that don't always connect together until they do in the end, but this never does. In fact, I will say something to you, Emery. This is one of my guilty pleasure, almost favorite of that genre type Bond films, with my least favorite Bond song.
Oh, I agree. It's I think in the hierarchy of because I put Spectre pretty high up on the ranking of Daniel Craig Bond films. I really like Spectre. You know, there's one thing that people don't like about Spectre, and I can understand why they don't like
color coding.
No. It's the brother thing. Like I know that not everyone agrees with that. Well, there's two, but I think the color issue is a different thing. But I think that it kind of does, it works for Spectre. It's not that bad. We do get a lot of different color kind of colorations in Quantum. I mean, just the background there, the kind of orange, golden. We see that a lot at the end. There's those kind of tones too. But I enjoyed Spectre. Skyfall got ruined for me because of how they presented the kind of all the behind the scenes stuff. I think I got too into that, and it kind of tinged my opinion for it. But Quantum was kind of like, there was that anticipation. It's a direct follow up to the great Quantum, Casino Royale. We're introducing this new organization of bad guys. It's going to replace Spectre, and I think that aspect of Quantum was extremely well done. And I was really disappointed that they didn't push Quantum farther, because that is the one thing that I think that they did extremely well, was the structure of Quantum. And just the scene right after the song, like they pull in and they're interrogating Mr. White. And I think all that, everything that kind of follows that, sets up the plot so well for what could have been, you know, a great replacement for Spectre, since they couldn't technically use it.
You're hitting on something really important with this film, which I think is why it wanes a little bit in people's opinion, is expectations. So if you remember that first trailer where Bond's coming up kind of the desertscape with the giant gun and stuff, and it's like bump, 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 bump. And everybody's like, you got douche chills. I mean, you literally got douche chills.
Yeah.
I hope that's appropriate for me to say. But anyway, you got chills up your back where you were like, oh my gosh, the best Bond movie in the world has a sequel to it. And it's going to be bigger because it's about the organization behind everything you saw happen in Casino Royale. Yeah. What happened is you got a much more personal, smaller stake movie. I mean, it's about water, but it's a smaller mission movie. So if you love smaller mission Bond-focused movies, you're going to love Quantum. If you were expecting this bigger world to be opened up because of the expectations that Ian set, you were going to be disappointed.
It really is a personal kind of journey for Bond but they've done it before, and I think the backlash has kind of been, or the commentary has kind of been the same, because License to Kill wasn't this grandiose adventure either. It was maybe a little bit more than Quantum, but it was kind of along the similar lines of this revenge plot condensed into the one movie. But I think what they kind of, with Quantum, I think they did a really kind of personal thing, but they kind of jammed too much in at the same time in the story arcs, in particular, like the Felix story arc and the Mathis story arc. Felix, I like how they kind of weaved it in there throughout near the end, but the Mathis arc was kind of, for me,
does that feel forced to you?
It does feel forced. I think like maybe did they have Giancarlo for a second movie and then they didn't have anything written for him, and when they got to filming, like, they just did it on the fly and they had something, you know. Yeah. We know that there was a writer strike. We know that there was writing issues, and they wanted to get the movie out because they were competing fiercely with the Jason Bourne series. So they wanted to get a movie out. But I think that's one of the main things that suffers from it, is that story arc doesn't seem as developed, and he seems not well utilized in that movie.
I'll give you my opinion on that, because I really do like all the weaving of like the Mathis and the Felix Leiter part, but the Mathis in particular, what I think they were showing, what I think it does well, is that Bond doesn't have to be just a company man. You know, mm-hmm. he's basically ostracized. He's rebutted by MI6, and he's got to go off on his own. So what does he do? Does he go, might as well just come home and go on holiday? No, he's a resourceful character that uses his friends and allies. And Bond, all the way back from Russia with Love, you know, uses Bond and allies, bad and good, to his own use. You know, that's kind of the resourcefulness of Bond. So I really like Mathis. And I've got to tell you, man, you know this about me for so many years. I love the lifestyle, smaller moments of Bond.
Right.
You know, like when they're having wine, you know, when he knocks on the door and he's doing all these things. Like, to me, that's the candy that you get in Quantum of Solace. So if it was ripped out of there, I think I'd be like, I miss my Whoopi.
I think it's more the how they finish him off.
Another thing.
But I don't mind that they used him at the end like that. But it's just the tossing in the dumpster. That for me was, okay, now you've ruined it. Because they could have maybe softened that a little bit. Everything else was great. I think that scene
You're too Canadian.
Needs to be polite.
Us Americans were like, well, of course you're going to throw the body in the dumpster. Where do you throw it? You don't throw it in a hefty bag. You know, people down south in Florida will cut it in pieces.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah.
We have our places here in Canada too, but that's another story for another time.
You guys will hold a whole funeral. You'll have food, and Mounties will show up. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, possibly, but it's the scene where he does knock on the door and he goes and he's having the wine. I think the little bit of comedy between Mathis's girlfriend and you're not just serving them expensive wine. That's just cheap wine. That's all you buy. I think that was great.
I love that. And they're selling, I think they're drinking Yellowtail, which you can get for like $9.99. See, but by the way, is there a time when you drink cold white wine somewhere, especially outside, and you don't think about that scene? I always think about that scene.
Well, honestly, sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends. If I'm outside, yeah, it does kind of have that feeling.
Right.
Yellowtail here and all, and just a brief anecdote of how different maybe Canada and the United States are. We have very controlled liquor laws, but in the province of Quebec where I'm at, is you kind of have this difference where you can buy wine and beer at the grocery store, and then you have liquor stores for your hard liquor and good wine. So Yellowtail would be the wine that you can get at a convenience store for $8 or $9. You get them in a box, and you get them in the mega, the mega pint for Johnny
Depp. Exactly.
And then you have, you know, the good stuff at the liquor store. So if someone had brought me a bottle of Yellowtail, I'd be like, oh God, you don't know anything about wine. And I'm not pretending to be a connoisseur, but I don't drink wine that I get from the grocery store, the convenience store.
First of all, Emery, where you live, especially, you have a lot of French DNA in you. You better damn well know your good wine.
And I'm trying. I do, but I know for us, it's a kind of the stereotypical wine. If you're buying wine from the grocery store and that's what you're bringing to my house, I'll just pull out a good bottle from my.
By the way, we fridge. We totally bamboozled everybody listening or watching right now, because this is now the wines of James Bond. This is not Quantum of Solace review anymore. We've gone off the deep end.
We're going to slice this part, and this will go on Instagram. It'll be our little wine review.
That's right. Easy.
There's not much drinking in Quantum of Solace. I mean, besides the little wine scene, and then on the plane where he's had six Vespers. We haven't seen him drink the six Vespers, but he's really only had, if I'm remembering correctly, two drinks in the entire movie.
No, he drinks everywhere. Oh, the beer. So
yeah.
Everywhere. Okay.
Everywhere. Well, all right. I'm not thinking now the beer at the end with Felix and.
Well, but also he's drinking when he's even just talking to M right after the opening song. He's literally looking at the pictures of Esper and her boyfriend drinking out of the Durex,
oh, yes,
the Durex glass behind me. That and then true. At the Greens party, he has a drink. And then later on, he has a drink.
I mean, it's just so casual now that I'm not even noticing.
Oh, it's a drinking movie. Maybe not as much as Casino Royale, but it's up there.
No, see, Casino, I think, was just more noticeable, the amount of drinking that was going on. And I think just in the other movies, we just get, I guess, so used to it. And it's, you know, my habitual
white
weekend.
Noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After 7 p.m. on a weekend, I mean, I'm into a whole bunch of different stuff.
Exactly. So you mentioned Felix Leiter.
Yeah.
What did you think of the portrayal of Felix Leiter in this versus maybe Casino Royale?
Well, I think it kind of falls on trend of a lot of movies at the time, because, I mean, it was kind of the whole Jason. Like, I'm going to compare Quantum a lot to Jason Bourne, because I think it's got a better parallel to the first couple of Jason Bourne movies than it does really to Casino. There's a lot of more parallels in terms of the action, the fighting, the way that it's filmed as well. I mean, I don't think it's really Mark Forster's style necessarily to do it that way, but it was kind of really you can't deny that it doesn't look like a Jason Bourne movie. But at the same time, the kind of that political betrayal, I think we kind of expect it. I mean, that's a common theme that we see even in I don't know if you watched the Jack Ryan series now on Prime.
No.
It's kind of got those same undertones of, you know, the CIA betrayal and FBI and et cetera. So I kind of expected that to be like, I mean, I wasn't surprised by it, but I like how they did it. Like, I did like how M knew that if she was being transferred to the section chief of South America, that she knew that he had interest in Green, and that was a whole thing. She knew automatically. There was no doubt in her mind that that was a thing. So I kind of liked that kind of arc, and I kind of liked how Felix was a little bit morose, and he didn't agree with it, and you could visibly see it on his face. Jeffrey Wright is such a great actor that you kind of like really get that impression that he knew he wasn't doing the right thing, and then helping Bond out at the end and keeping that kind of deception from his boss, but helping his brother on.
I love his cool as a cucumber delivery of lines. You know, even when he's handing the phone over, he's like, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, just like, hey, man. So I think he continued it well, because I always, I don't always, but sometimes when asked, I compare this Felix Leiter to the one you see in No Time to Die, same actor. Mm-hmm. But the one in No Time to Die is like now this kind of jovial family man. He's like, hey, man, you know, this and that. It's like, wait a minute, what happened to the cool cucumber guy I wanted to be? You're like,
because he's kind of the same in Casino and in Quantum. Like Casino, he's kind of that cold, cool.
Yes.
But you know, the scene in the stairwell where he stops him and they have that little discussion and the little wink and everything. And that's like, wow, Felix Leiter is cool now. Not that David Hedison wasn't cool, but Jeffrey Wright kind of brings that new, this is the fresh new Felix Leiter, the only kind of character that they carried over besides M to the Daniel Craig franchise. They decided, let's go with Felix first, before Moneypenny, before Q, before anyone else. Let's go with Felix Leiter. And they carry him over to Quantum, and he's still cool. I liked him in No Time to Die, but I think he's kind of got that more badass tinge to him in the first two that he's in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm.
And David Hedison did a great job, but I honestly think that Jeffrey Wright is one of my more favorite Felixes, because I think he did such a great job of both Quantum and Casino. I had No Time to Die.
I love how David Hedison gets over his wife's death so quickly. He's like, hey, James, I got a nurse right here. You want one? I got two. Wow.
I'm a little surprised that for the 80s, I thought they would be a little more progressive. I kind of maybe expected that if it was happened in the 60s, but the 80s, a little more progressive.
It's still kept us going strong. Damn it.
For the villains, how did you find Dominic Green as a villain in this film?
I actually like him. I know he gets a lot of stick from people, but I think he does crazy incredibly well. He's almost, you know what I've said to people? He's almost akin to, he's the Joker of James Bond. You know, and I know Silva is sort of compared to the Joker a bit, but, you know, he's got this kind of wild-eyed, crazy look. His motivations are bonkers, but he's incredibly planful, diabolical, violent. You know, I love the violence at the end between him and Bond.
Yeah.
But I don't think he gets that other Bond villains that are more famous get, like Goldfinger, is a big story, a big environment to surround him, a big motivation. He's a capitalist. He's all after the success, the power, and the money. Mm-hmm. So that to some people seems a little, excuse the pun, watery, a little thin. Right. But I like him. How did you find him?
I like him as well. I just think that maybe what was missing from his performance was a little bit of presence. He doesn't feel as ominous as other people. And I like how you compared the Joker to with Silva. I think Silva embodies the Joker a little bit more. And it's a shame that Matt's not here because Matt's a huge Batman fan. Oh. But I find that Silva embodies kind of the Joker-ism a little bit better, because Joker traditionally in the comics and everything has been more about chaos. Like, he just wants to spur chaos. Right. Whereas Dominic Green is very organized in his chaos. He knows what he's doing, and absolutely a capitalist, more so than Le Chiffre, maybe, because Le Chiffre was, of course, obviously a capitalist. He was also a very greedy capitalist, because he was going after the aggressive ways to make fast money, where Green was more planting the seeds of how can I make the most money over the long term. He was a better investor than Le Chiffre was, obviously. What I didn't like about Green was he had a horrible henchman. I mean, aside from Elvis's haircut, he didn't do anything.
No, I mean, Elvis was his brother. I mean, you know, but I agree. Like, everybody says Elvis is the worst henchman, and he probably is, because he really doesn't have a henchman in this film, which is kind of interesting. So there is that weakness of that, but I think it allows you to then focus a little bit more on Green. What I like about Green, two things. I like what they did, and I don't think they did this on purpose, but he's an incredible manipulator of governments and systems. So it really shows how a real bad guy, you know, even financial or government, will manipulate people and situations to his own well-being. The second thing is, it kind of sets up an interesting backstory. Why is his brother with him? Right. You know, why is he sitting there stamping? Why is he surrounding himself with these, you know, maniacal goons? And it creates all these whys that I think are just very interesting.
There's a lack of character development for,
by the way, there's his shirt, Screen Use, right there.
Screen Use on top of it. Wow.
Oh yeah. Most of this stuff is Screen Use behind me.
You've got to see it. See, I've got, you know, nice design props by friends.
I like that, man. And don't forget your very scary filing cabinet filled with taxes.
filled to the brim with taxes and school supplies.
Good Lord.
So this could have been screen used in the Haitian scene of Quantum, you know, in the little shop. Yeah, let's pretend that from now on.
Done. We got to put some sort of logo on there, and you're done.
You know what? I'll get Matt to drop some Green Planet logos and get some stickers made. And
Mathieu. Can you do a Matt impression? So he looks almost like he's here.
It's you know what? If I could, but I feel that I would not be doing it justice, because I do like
that would be even funnier. But
the stereotypical French Canadian accent.
Everybody can do Edgar.
Yeah, Edgar's easy to.
This is Edgar here from James Bond Complex.
He's very, very nice.
Smoky voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when he does his Fleming impression. That's always a good time. But Matt's harder to do, because Matt's got the accent, but it's more his, how can I say this? It's his delivery that's hard to get down. But love him to death. He's designed so many things visually for us.
I know. He's amazing. We digress.
Yeah. But going back to Dominic Green, I know that you had spoken to Donnie on his podcast about kind of like the real world comparisons of Dominic Green. Do you think they really pulled that off for the movie? Because I think that the whole, like, he's doing all this for water resources. It seems kind of like maybe in today's world of trying to save the planet and being more conscious of ecological repercussions of what we do and things like that, maybe that it hits a heartstring more. But does it feel appropriate for a Bond movie to be doing that?
You're going to hate my two answers I'm going to give you because they're two very different. I think if Quantum of Solace had come out in 2023, it would do extremely well as far as the plot is concerned, because you've got Greta, you've got you know, global issues, et cetera. And I think people, whether you side with that or don't side with that, you're more aware of it at least. So it's like, ooh, okay, yeah, I see why they went in this direction. Back in 2008, I think people were like, wait, well, hold on a second. Water? We went from volcanoes and world domination and Drax in outer space and, you know, the Atlantis trying to create a world underwater. And now you're talking about water?
Right.
Like, no. I actually love it because it's more real world. I still think it has those Bond tenets of fantasy play. But the fantasy in Quantum of Solace is all around James Bond. It's not around the bad guys. It's not around the plot. All of those things are plausible and have actually happened. So it, again, concentrates. It puts the spotlight right on James Bond as opposed to the plot.
Right. Because other Bond movies, I mean, while some of them have been somewhat plausible, and I can think of maybe Tomorrow Never Dies being a kind of, I mean, we're kind of seeing it now with Elon Musk and Twitter and this, you know, rich guy is controlling the media kind of thing. It's always kind of been there. So it kind of feels to me like it was one of the more plausible plots, where Quantum does kind of have the plausibility to it. In terms of yeah, I mean, it has happened or probably has happened many times over. We don't even know about it. So I think that kind of aspect was really interesting to bring, but like in 2008, I mean, no one was really too concerned. We were still at war with Iraq, and there was so many other things going on in Afghanistan and all that, that, you know, the media wasn't focused on the environment. They didn't care.
I think people forget, though, when they think of Quantum and go, meh, water, is what was Casino Royale really all about? It was about stopping a terrorist from gaining more money to invest in more terrorism. I mean, that doesn't sound incredibly huge either.
No, Dougal Schiff was basically a financial terrorist. He was funding terrorism through finance, and no one can tell me that doesn't happen, or that hasn't been happening, or wasn't happening at the time, because obviously Al Qaeda was getting money from somewhere, so they were financing it somehow. So there was probably a Schiff type character somewhere doing the same kind of stuff, you know.
And it's 100 million, which that's a lot of money, but I mean that's like the catering bill for Olivar Brown. I mean, it's not a monstrous amount of money.
How much champagne were you guys drinking out there? You know?
It was a lot of champagne, is what I'm saying. That's all.
I think speaking about that, just a little side note. Our friend Jean from James Bond Quebec was at with the James Bond Club France events in October. And he gave me some astronomical number of cases of champagne that had been ordered for that event. And I was like, I want to see the bill.
Did they drink it all?
I think they drank it all too. What happened with them was they had to change venues, because the original venue that they had fallen apart days before the event. So at the last minute, they were able to secure a boat and shuffle the entire event onto a boat on the Seine in Paris. And I think he told me it was 20 something cases of champagne.
Good.
And I was
Lord,
like,
man.
And you didn't bring a bottle back for me? Like, I could have.
Yeah, no kidding. Way to go. Slip
the bottle in your bag and like, no.
You think of yourselves.
Exactly. Touching on kind of the other, we've kind of spoken about the villains and the henchmen and the plot and things like that. What about the Bond girls? Find first of all Olga Kurylenko in her role as a Bolivian half Russian spy.
This may or may not surprise you. She's in my top five Bond girls in the entire franchise. And
in
I
the entire franchise, okay.
In the entire franchise, I mean, Vesper is always going to stay number one. But the reason I liked her so much is going to fly in the face of what a lot of people like about Bond girls. I like that she was her own character. She had her own motivation, her own plot that didn't always intersect with Bond's.
Right.
And they're really, I mean, other than a little bit of flirtation and Bond stealing a kiss at the end, there wasn't this big betting scene. I mean, that was Strawberry Fields' job, so to speak, in the film. She was the femme fatale. But I think she was strong, motivated. I love when she's kind of like cleaning the gun and telling Bond to clean his own gun. I mean, those little moments. And I feel like she had an arc. You know, she was set out for revenge. The whole discussion between her and Bond, Fleming, as you know so well, because you're a huge fan, he loves always talking about the winged dove woman. This was a winged dove that had turned into a fiery phoenix.
Yeah.
And I love that they really brought this out in the film in an indelible way. I thought she killed it.
I think it's one of those characters where, you know, they talked about in the early 2000s of why don't we do a Jinx movie? Because they had that kind of the whole character. I'm glad they didn't do it. But they had talked about doing it because they wanted to expand on her arc. But I find that with Quantum, they didn't need to do that because we saw her arc and we're not left wanting more of her story. Whereas I find maybe with No Time to Die, if they had said, okay, we're going to do a standalone Nomi movie, I would say, well, if you did it really, really well, it could be a shot that works. But you would have to do it super well.
Emery, I'm going to flex your morning muscles because when we're recording this, it's early. Imagine, and what would be your opinion if for No Time to Die, when Bond goes to Cuba, instead of meeting Paloma, he actually met up with Olga's character?
Oh, that would have been a nice twist. Our
heads would explode.
Not to knock Ana de Armas, because I think she did a fantastic job, and I did like what they did with her. But yeah, that would have tied the series together a little bit better. And why wouldn't they have? It would have been
exactly.
They bring back everyone else for different and diverse reasons.
She survived very well. She's very capable. Now she's probably even better. You know, part of the Bolivian government's, you know, crack team of people.
Why wouldn't she have an interest in Spectre? Because she was hunting down Dominic Green and Madranos, and they were in bed together. So why wouldn't they be? Why wouldn't she be after Spectre?
Come on, that's a good point. People, why don't you hire us?
Yeah, that's we won't get into that, but. just a consultation fee is all I'm asking. A bottle of champagne.
That's it.
You know,
that's it. Yeah, that's all.
Day and a half in an Aston Martin. I'm all right. I'm good. I'm tired of driving a minivan every day. I work cheap. I'm a. You can win me over real easy, Eon. It's Barbara. Yeah. Just knock on the door.
By the way, to put a cap on the Bond girls. I have to ask, what did you think of Strawberry Fields?
I think it was a good use of just a momentary character. I don't want to call it a throwaway character, but it's she gave a good performance. Jim Martin's a great actress. It added some color. It added some interest. You know, they kill her off the end, but kind of you kind of expected that. You didn't expect them to ride off in the sunset together. It was really a. I just think that the one kind of misuse, and it was a misuse of both her and Elvis, was the scene going up the stairs. I mean, there was no point in that interaction because the conversation between Bond and Green had already kind of finished, and they were already kind of turning around, and he was coming up the stairs too late, and she was already halfway up the stairs, so he wasn't doing anything anyway. So it was just kind of like, haha, I pushed you down the stairs.
She was kind of being a dick.
Yeah, it was not called for. It was come on.
You're doing that.
But I mean, her presentation was good. I mean, they didn't waste any time on character development. She didn't even ever give her full name. It was just Fields. Fields.
Yeah.
Like no frills. That's it. That's all you're getting.
And that's a great point, Emery. It's like you said, you know, this is a pretty simple character that is going to serve a simple role. So they've even simplified her nomenclature, her name. That's a great point.
We knew where she was going to be thrown away. She knew she's not coming back for another movie. She's not anyone important. So why waste time on character development? She's there, she's gone. And the way that they use her as a plot device, they covered her in oil, throwback to Goldfinger, but at the same time trying to push them off the scent of, you know, we're not looking for oil, we're looking for something else. No, we're looking for oil. Look, we covered her in oil.
She's a representation of what Dominic Green actually says, which is everything he touches seems to wither and die. You know, it's like, you're dead, lady.
I really enjoyed his performance going back to Dominic Elmerich just briefly. I think he really delivered a great performance, kind of on par with Christoph Waltz as Blofeld, that calm, even, but at the same time, menacing delivery. Yes. I love Christoph Waltz. Like, I mean, say what you will about Spectre and his character as Blofeld. I think he did an amazing job But Dominic Almmerich as Dominic Green, just that his diction, his attitude.
Yeah.
In the scene right after in Austria, right after the opera, when he's getting in the car and the guy lands on his hood and it's like, is he one of ours? Then why is he looking at me?
Yeah.
Just that whole scene, like that arrogance was perfect. French arrogance at its perfection.
Yeah, you're right. And a lot of people go on about his eyes, and I think it's worth it. It's because his eyes are so, they have so much expression. I mean, he can actually say words with just his eyes, which amazing.
And I think it's underappreciated, his performance in this movie, really, because there's a lot of stuff. And some people don't like the screaming at the end when he's attacking him with the axe, but I'm like, that's the best. I mean, he's
a lunatic. Acting.
He's crazy. He's insane. Yeah. He's lost all his marbles. And I think when they finish off his story with the when he drives him out into the middle of the desert and says, I told you everything I know, I did what you wanted, and he just leaves him there with the can of oil. I think that was amazing. That was just a great little
dun,
piece.
Dun, 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 dun. It's like,
That was, I think that was one of the stronger points for me. One of the other strong points of Quantum, and this is obviously your domain as well, is the style. This is casual Bond at its best. We get three jackets, a cardigan. He's just lounging around. He's got the one tux where he's super proper at the opera that he steals. It's not his. He steals it. But everything else, like the jackets, and how do you think that's influenced us as Bond fans? Because I think Quantum is the one movie that really has had some of the most influence on casual styles.
Much more than probably any other Bond film. Because even people who love Spectre, and I love Spectre's style, for example, you wouldn't have had that incredible community of sartorial-leaning people without Quantum. I think Quantum just put it into the stratosphere. And not just the casual, his suits, his Tom Ford suits there are absolutely beautiful. They were a step above from a style standpoint from Brioni. But yes, casual Bond, what Quantum allowed all of us to do, and I'll include you and everybody else who thinks they're not into style, is that suddenly you were buying blue polos and cardigans aren't just for old men playing chess in the park or right. Mr. Rogers. Like it elevated everybody to think about, you know, something, my style may not be defined by a jersey and a baseball cap, that maybe it's something else. And I think it just did elevate our appreciation, not just of what shows up in Quantum, but style in general, the way things fit, you know, looking at, you know, him, and you can actually see his body, not rippling through there, but you can actually see that there's a human form, as opposed to these, you know, oversized outfits that, you know, we've been wearing all of our lives. So I think Quantum is the one that not only has the best casual styles of any film, I know that's a big statement, but I think it actually is the one that transformed the Bond community for non-style people to think about style.
I'll be perfectly honest, this is all anecdotal, but probably around that time, I was kind of transitioning from I was working in the electronics field, where I was working in a factory that was manufacturing and testing. So I was always just wearing like a lab coat and not being really conscious of my style. And I was still kind of in my rocker phase, where it was the jeans and a t-shirt was my go-to and a baseball cap. But then Quantum came out, and since Quantum, I've bought a stand collar jacket, a tab collar jacket, and then I'll go out and I'll see another tab collar jacket. And I was like, ooh, this one's really nice. And the other night I was working for another new tab collar jacket, and the jacket at the end of Quantum, I needed a new winter jacket, and I went with something that was beyond my style. I was more into the sportier ski jackets and things like that. And I said, this was a proper adult coat. And it was the first kind of one that I owned that was a proper adult long coat. Spectre got me into the Navy, the kind of the double-breasted pea coat, which I never would have bought 10 years ago. I would never even have thought of buying that. Or 15 years ago, was not my style whatsoever. It was band t-shirts and jeans, and didn't matter if they were a little bit ripped. It was okay. And now, since then, you know, I've bought more khakis and been more conscious of working in an office. Helped me kind of like, well, I'm going to wear a tie like every day. And I wasn't doing that before.
You know what Quantum did, because you're nailing it. What Quantum did was it knocked down the wall of turning us from spectators of a Bond movie to actually immersing ourselves in our daily lives into this, what I call invisible Bond, where you could actually wear some of the pieces that you thought, ah, that, you know, from an emulation standpoint, that might look good on me. Like right. the Harrington over my shoulder right now.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many different versions everybody's had of these things. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. You don't need to have the Tom Ford one. You just, a Navy Harrington will do. You can get right. one for $29 at Target or Kmart. And yeah. suddenly you have a Bond moment. And people were like, hold on a second. I can own a piece of Bond from the movie in my mind as a part of my psychology. I'm in.
And it's the blue polo too. I mean, that was such an iconic thing from Casino Royale. That was, I think right after Casino Royale, everyone bought a blue polo. Like everyone bought a blue polo. It doesn't matter where, Target, Old Navy, Gap had a fantastic one. I've actually got one that's from Schlesinger. That's kind of, you know, an old Bond brand, but they make a blue polo, so why not? And this week I was joking on the Penfold Instagram, they'd come out with two new polos, a green one and a pink one.
Yes.
And I was like, as soon as you make a blue one, Bond community is going to explode because that's what we need. We're going to buy a Penfold blue
that's
polo.
That's what Gavin needs to hear.
Yeah. So Gavin, if you're listening, I take a size large. Shipping to Canada is pretty okay. Just don't send it by DHL.
You would definitely, yeah, you would like the Penfold polos.
I mean, I golf when I can. I haven't been able to get out there lately, but lately it's 3 feet of snow or such, but you know,
that's that'll get different, away.
Different story. I wanted to maybe touch on one other aspect that we really haven't talked about, and that's set design of Quantum. There's a lot of interesting moments and interesting scenes. I think Quantum is one of the more globe-trotting films out of the Daniel Craig ones, because we're kind of bouncing back between the Caribbean and Europe. What did you think of the set design? And I want to start in Haiti, actually, when he's fighting with the unnamed Slate. Agent that he doesn't speak. Yeah, Slate. With Slate. Yes, and the hanging off of the ropes, and he.
Oh no, no, that was
no,
Mitchell.
That's before. Yeah, that was Mitchell before. Excuse me.
And that's in Siena.
Yeah, in Siena. Sorry, I knew it was different. No, so in Siena, where he grabs the gun, I think that scene was I know that the movie gets a lot of comparisons to Bourne, but this is wilder. When they fall through the roof and they're on the scaffolding and then they're tangled up in the ropes and he grabs the gun and he grabs the other cord and he comes up and he shoots him. I think that was amazing little piece of simple set design.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I love this the set design in this movie anyway, the end, you know, obviously in, you know, the place that blows up, the Hotel de Lune. Yeah. But I love that set as well, that sort of tower of scaffolding that happens because it's again, kind of like Casino Royale, where he uses the construction site to his own use. You know, Bond is somebody that is trained to use his environment to get his mission done. And that is a perfect example of that. I love Siena as a backdrop. Siena looks exactly like the medieval city that it is. The way they used location, environment, and sets in this is seamless. Even London just doesn't, you know, the rainy coldness, the icy blue of London. In Skyfall, you know, the way Mendez shoots and Spectre too, London, it's a love story. You know, he loves London. So he's, you can see in this perfect light. Anybody that's been to London knows it can be a rainy, cold Charles Dickens type place.
Yeah.
And I think Forrester really shows that in his set design and the way he sets locations. So A+.
Yeah, I think the gloomy London is the stereotype that we think of, but it's a love of, but I think that's really Fleming. And I think that Sam Mendes does that a little bit better with the getting the Fleming feel of things. And I think maybe that was the only thing that's lacking from Quantum. It doesn't have that Fleming feel for some parts of it. But at the same time, it's an amazing use of situational awareness and spy craft and just knowing where I am, what I can use. Even the fight with in Haiti with Slate. There's a good use of the room. I mean, it's just a plain hotel room in Haiti, but he uses everything around him to get this fight off. it would have been nice to maybe have some dialogue to go along with Slate rather than just.
Nah.
But M, you know, already scolds him for it, so we don't have to go any further. Exactly. But I think those are those sets, even the set underground when he first arrives in Siena, and he drives through the tunnel and they're interrogating Mr. White, going through all those little tunnels underground and things like that was great use of the space. I don't know if that's exactly what's under there or if they built that set, but a lot of stuff was the hotel was a great use of space. It felt really, really empty. I know that they explained it that way, but at the same time, it could have been more than one staff member working there. I was kind of expecting to maybe a few more people guarding the hotel.
Go home.
Let's just keep one waitress and all the security in the garage, and that's it.
Exactly.
That felt weird to me. That felt a little weird to me.
I'll give you that. Yeah.
But stylistically, it looks fantastic. The opera is they couldn't have picked a better spot to do the opera.
The opera's a lot of people's favorite scene of the movie because it's so stylistic, you know, bombastic in its action. Love it.
But also going back to the aspect of how Quantum could have been a better use of kind of like this organization to replace Spectre. Because I don't know how advanced they were in the negotiations to buy the rights back from Macquarie at that point. But they kind of really laid the groundwork for Quantum to be the future operation that he's going against instead of this, you know, individual political country. Let's go against Quantum. And I think that scene set it up perfectly. I mean, these guys are so discreet that they're meeting in plain sight.
Exactly. Which I think, you know, this whole movie is about things in plain sight. I mean, there wasn't a lot of hiding. I mean, they're on a dock in Haiti, you know, having these conversations and action moments. So it wasn't like the From Russia with Love in the Shadow type film. This was in your face.
And how do you feel they as a standalone movie compared to Casino, does it have to stick with Casino for it to be relevant, or does this hold its own?
Even as a Quantum fan, I think you need the positive baggage of Casino Royale to truly enjoy Quantum. If this was Daniel Craig's first James Bond movie, people would think like, oh my gosh, they went all Mission Impossible 2 on me.
Yeah.
Like it's just, you know, this John Woo kind of like flying around by the seat of your pants. What happened to Die Another Day? You know, the fantastical stuff. Can you imagine? But I think Casino Royale brings so much positive aspect of who Bond is, who Craig's Bond is, especially, that you kind of need the two of them. And that's, which is why so many people who have revisited this, what they've done very intelligently is said, I'm going to watch Casino Royale and then I'm going to go get a snack, go pee, and then I'm going to come back and watch Quantum of Solace.
And watch Quantum. Well, I think they complement each other. I don't think that, I think Casino stands its own as a standalone movie. If you watch just Casino, that's fine. You don't need Quantum. But at the same time, does the end of Quantum finish the loop of that starts in Casino? Because Casino, we're kind of left on the cliffhanger of he's found Mr. White. Now what does he do with him? And we kind of get the Bond theme and that's it. So we're kind of left on the edge of how does it resolve? Even with the end with the Vesper's lover.
I think
that really does a good job of like closing that loop and giving us that finality of okay, that story arc is done.
100%. I agree with you. I think what it does is it sets up for Skyfall, which it is, that now the next Bond should be Bond on a mission, and he's got a clear sight ahead. Like, he's put that other stuff to bed. I know they keep revisiting it a lot. They revisit Vesper and Spectre and of course, No Time to Die and all this stuff. But I think that puts a nice little bow on it in Quantum.
I think that Skyfall stands very well on its own. It doesn't need the previous two, and doesn't need the last two. Spectre does as well.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that the Vesper mentions are as strong as, obviously No Time to Die, it's very heavy on it, but No Time to Die kind of closes off everything. Like they close off, they shut, as I was watching it in theaters, I'm like, okay, they've shut that door, they've shut that door, they've shut that door. I didn't know he was going to die at the end, and spoiler alert, if you haven't seen No Time to Die, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? But at the when he dies at the end, it's kind of like, I don't like it, but I understand it. Like there's closure, but you don't want it. You don't want that closure. I mean, we obviously know that there's another movie coming, but you kind of get that closure of it's over. but you knew it was over. There was nothing. There's nothing left to hang on. There's no chance of this continuing. They've killed Felix Leiter. They've killed off the Vesper Link. They've killed off Spectre. They've killed off Blofeld. Everyone's dead. Like there's no trace of anything left over. It's all done. The only thing that kind of left me wanting was, well, Lamb messed up. We're not gonna revisit that. Like he's kind of wished there was like a sequel to like scoop that up, you know, or that's where I kind of think that a Nomi side movie would be like, oh well, we can clean that up. But at the same time, as you're you're stretching the continuity or you're stretching the universe, and I don't like to use the universe words because I mean that's kind of makes it too Marvel or too DC, but
I don't know if I could watch an entire movie about an impetulant 00, but yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, I think that's one of the major I think she did a good job, but I think at the same time there was a little that's another episode
exactly.
I think that's that kind of for me. Kind of wraps it up. Did you have anything else that you wanted to mention about Quantum?
The only other thing that I'll ask you just to kind of wrap this up a little bit is, I mean, you know my feelings of this film. It's not in the reverent, hallowed ground, biblical Casino Royale cathedral for me. In other words, when I watch Casino Royale, I'm sitting there, I'm just watching Casino Royale and just, I don't even pick up my phone. I'm just like, no, this is it. With Quantum of Solace, I can kind of dust. You know, I'm cleaning up, I'm checking Instagram, looking up every now and then. Oh, I remember that tower fight. Like, to me, it's just a fun kind of piece of enjoyment. How do you like it? Like, out of all this, I mean, are you a fan? Are you not a fan?
You know what? That's you make a super great point, because most of the time, if I watch a Bond movie, I'm watching it with my wife. She's watched since we got together in April of 2006. So it kind of coincided with Daniel Craig's start. So we saw Casino Royale in theaters, and we've seen every movie in theaters together. So it's been a great tradition for that. So generally speaking, if I'm watching a Bond movie, I'm watching it with her no matter what. It's a once every weekend, once every second weekend kind of thing. We're watching a Bond movie.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time, I sat down and I watched a Bond movie alone. And I decided I'm going to put my full concentration, and I'm going to leave my phone to the side. There's no conversation. And that's when all the little pieces of Quantum that I didn't like popped out even more. Because I remember the last time I watched it, I watched it with her and I enjoyed it. I was okay with it. But there was that kind of like casual distraction. This time it was just me, a beer, and I put my phone to the side and I tried not to be distracted. I tried to enjoy the movie on its own. And I was very tempted to pick up my phone because there was parts where like, this is kind of slow. This is kind of, you know, this is background noise for me a little bit. Bond movie, but background noise, you know?
It's so funny too, because there's a saying, and I did not quote it because it's too good. It's something like, nobody hates a Bond movie as much as a Bond movie lover. Like, we're so analytical. We analyze these things to death that we're just going to be like ping, 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 ping. But yeah, I hear you, man. It's listen, this is what's great about the Bond community, is that we can have so many different opinions and points of view and still be good friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's never been a discussion. Well, I won't say this fully, but there's never been a discussion with frank Bond fans that I've had, even if I've been not in agreement with their opinion, where I said, okay, I'm never talking to this person ever again. That's only ever happened on Twitter, but that's...
Oh, Twitter's a cesspool.
It's a different animal. I mean, we got out of there, and I don't think things are getting any better with Twitter, but there's so many things wrong with it. But I think like I've had many discussions on Instagram and on Facebook and in person. And I mean, I'm a grumpy guy. So sometimes like...
Really? You know, I don't see that.
Oh, you're lucky. Ask anyone. Like I can get.
You're nice to me.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll tell you what, though. You tell your posse people. Yeah. I said posse. It's not R-rated. You tell your posse, Edgar and Mathieu, and especially Jason Kim, that this was a great conversation that they missed, and they're the ones that lost.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have to put this on YouTube just to like look at how much fun we had.
Dig it in, see all of our smiles and our are waving hand gestures. Exactly. You think that we were two Italian old men sitting and talking about politics.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I mean, like Quantum, I mean, it gets a bad rap from a lot of people, and there's a lot of people that have, but I mean, there's a lot of people that enjoy it as well. I think Corey Kraft is a big fan of Quantum as well. But I mean, he's got the jackets too. And
my God, when you said Corey Kraft, I'm thinking like, is that the singer? But that's Corey Hart. Never mind.
Different Corey. Yeah. But I mean, like, I think the Omegas in this movie are great.
Great.
I think Skyfall's got some better ones, but I mean, we've got the Planet Ocean. I really like the Aquaterra. I really like
Aquaterra is gorgeous, but them's fighting words, man.
Yeah, but the Planet Ocean is nice. Like, I mean, like, there's a lot of things great. that I have gone and gotten with kind of the watches that mimic those diver watches.
Yeah. Yeah, the emulation ones. Yep.
Exactly. But I'm like, well, if I was to add this strap or this strap, then it would look like this movie. And I've got one that I'm looking at buying a strap that's very similar to the one in No Time to Die, just because I really like, not the Milanese strap, but the NATO strap, the kind of color. I really like that strap for whatever reason. It's just calling to me more so than the Dr. No and Goldfinger one and the Spectre one that I currently have on it. It's kind of like, it opened my, because I was a watch fan, and I've got a really bad Omega copy from the kind of the GoldenEye era that I wore for a very long time. But then I got into more well-made watches. I've got a nice Casio that I think everyone has who doesn't have an Omega has this particular Casio watch,
and
in the black as well, that looks like the that kind of would pass for those kind of Quantum vibes with the, if you change the strap just a little bit. And I think that kind of opened that world too in style size. It's not just the clothes. It's kind of like all the accessories that go with it. You kind of want to be, Quantum was the one, because Casino does a good job of it too, but he's wearing a lot of suits in Casino, and he does have the blue polo and the long sleeve polo at the end. And
yeah,
but he's almost all casual for good parts of Quantum. And like dressy casual too, because the cardigan, and I mean you champion the cardigan too. That's it's not the dusty old man chess playing in the park. You can dress it up, and you can. And I bought a cardigan when I was starting another office job, because all the guys were wearing ties and dressing up nice. I'm like, well, I can do it.
Cardigans
now.
In people's lives, I think, have replaced the blazer in some cases. I just went to a vacation with my wife where you have to kind of dress for dinner, so to speak.
Right.
And instead of wearing a blazer, I wore the ivory Quantum of Solace cardigan. Mm-hmm. Compliments galore, because it's dressed up. It's still got the lapel, but you're not sitting there with, like, you know, the blazer, you know, cutting your rubber chicken. It's like,
you're not tight, and you're not all, you kind of like casual, but dressy casual.
Yes.
And I think like even go farther into even Skyfall. Skyfall's got some great casual. I mean, the whole end with the nice sweater and with the casual kind of the hunting jacket, and it's like he looks like he's gonna go out and shoot grouse. Yeah, exactly.
The setter shorts and stuff like that.
Setter shorts and amazing. You know, and those are all easily paralleled. And as you mentioned it before, I mean, you did a whole series on Old Navy and Target back in the day.
Yeah.
Some people might be too young to remember that, but I mean, this is the stuff that I grew up with after Casino Royale and Quantum.
Right.
I was watching James Bond lifestyle videos, video podcasts with Mr. David Zaritsky, showing that you can get Bond style everywhere.
Babies.
And I got the tab collar jacket to match Quantum. I got it at Old Navy. And then I got another tab stand collar jacket that ended up not being black, but looked black in the store and ended up being brown. Worked for another movie, but it was kind of like the thing. I wanted a bomber jacket that had a stand collar because of the movie. So it ruined my bank account for a little while there. But I was also a time in my life where I was in an office 100% of the time. So it was, and a dressier office, because then I changed jobs and it was less dressy and everyone was wearing jeans and t-shirts like Monday to Friday. So kind of like had to adapt. But anyway, I digress. Thank you very much, David, for joining me today. It's unfortunate that, their loss. They should have been
here. Their loss.
Thanks for being with us today. You can join us on, might be on YouTube, probably will be on YouTube, definitely going to be on YouTube. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We have people everywhere.
Everywhere.
Facebook, The James Bond Complex, Instagram at the James Bond Complex. I'm on Instagram solo as well, but it's going to be a mix of food stuff. And in the next, as this comes out, you will have seen a bunch of photos from a, I'm actually going to a trade show next weekend. So last weekend for when this comes out, or the weekend before when this comes but it's all wine and spirits and whiskey and things like that. And
nice,
it's all local, so there's local gins. And I mean, if you've not been to Quebec and had the local gins, we've got probably 100 varieties of gins just in the province. So gins galore. There's going to be champagne, there's going to be whiskey. So great way to live up the Bond lifestyle. So my Instagram is going to be full of that in the next couple of weeks. So give us a listen, leave us a golden gun 5-star review. And of course you've got to follow the Bond Experience as well on your social media platforms. You probably are already. I mean,
no, not necessarily.
I think anyone who listens to us listens to you too, David. But anyway,
thank you for having me on. This was absolutely so much fun. What a great way to start a Saturday morning. Truly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time, David.
Thank you.